Happy Friday, everybody. My name is Mike Cutler, and I'd like to welcome all of you to the Michael Cutler Hour. We're running late today by 30 minutes. For those of you who've been wondering what happened to me, we had a technical glitch, but we got it all squared away, and we are finally up and running at 7:30 New York time and 7:30 or whatever time it is where you might happen to be. But we are 30 minutes behind schedule, but we will spend the extra half hour on the flip side, so we'll be on for at least an hour this evening. And it's always great to join you, and I thank you for being here with me to go over the madness that passes for life in these United States in this bizarre era of our American history, at a time when so many challenges confront our country, when there are so many concerns that are not being addressed by the politicians. And clearly, I don't think I'm alone in this, because if you look at the approval, or perhaps more importantly, the disapproval rating, you understand just how disgusted so many folks are. We have someone joining me. I'm going to bring him on, and then I'll introduce him to you. Ed Hayes, is that you?
Yes, it is, Mike. How you doing?
I'm doing great. I was just starting the program. We're doing it from 7:30 on, and folks, the gentleman's voice that you just heard is Ed Hayes. He's a career law enforcement officer, as I was. I spent my whole time with the Immigration and Naturalization Service, but half of my time was with the Drug Task Force, doing drug investigations and working with DEA intelligence, the FBI, and other agencies. I know you've done some work with the DEA, looking at your extensive bio also. I guess there's a lot of similarities between our life's work, yours and mine, although you were a police officer in Kansas and I was here in New York City. So without getting too far into this, why don't I bring you on, Ed, and introduce you to the audience, and I thank you for joining me this evening.
Sounds good.
How long ago did you become a police officer?
I started in the 60s, Mike, 65.
You beat me by 6 years. I started in 71, and you spent all your time in Kansas, is that correct?
Well, except when I was assigned to DEA, I worked the Western District of Missouri for 2.5 years, a little over that. And, I can't remember for sure. It was either 4 or 6 states, but we worked 6 states. But that was in the 70s. I worked undercover 7 years. Enough to that you and I both know about crime, and that's what makes me so mad about this illegal alien thing. It's what got me going in the first place.
Well, I know you started this amazing website, the Victims of Illegal Alien Crime, and I think it's a wonderful thing that you're doing. And, you know, there's a congressman by the name of Jones, and then, of course, Steve King from Iowa, the vice chairman of the Immigration Subcommittee. They're trying to get a bill through the Congress right now that would compel arresting agencies to list whether or not someone they arrest is an alien and whether or not they were illegally or legally present in the United States at the time that they were arrested. Isn't it remarkable that right now, today, with all the different ways that we describe people who are getting arrested, that there's not a word to be filled out, there isn't a box to be checked off, and any of that paperwork that talks about the immigration status of folks that are being arrested?
Well, it's amazing, and that's what we started our current website with. And I want to correct one thing. I did not start.
Okay.
BOIAC. That was started by other folks, one including Family Security Matters,
okay,
who handed it over to me because it wasn't being kept up. And with the help of Peter Wagner and Carol Tabor with Family Security Matters, it was turned over to me exclusive. Well, when I say me, it's our organization, but
right,
not me personally, but I am the administrator. But that is what we're doing. We are, the Foreign National Crime Information Center, designed after NCIC, the National Crime Information Center. But we do something that the law enforcement and the feds don't do, and we identify whatever country they're from.
You know, it's remarkable because when I was up at DEA, I was assigned to the Unified Intelligence Division of DEA back in 1988, and I stayed there for nearly 4 years, and in 1991 I was promoted to senior special agent and transferred over to the Organized Crime Drug Enforcement Task Force. But when I was up at DEA Intel, I had a brain spasm one day, and I asked my bosses if they could provide me with the arrest records of all the folks that were being arrested in New York and all the statistics nationally, because I was trying to figure out who we were arresting. And what I mean by who is where they were from. And you know that old thing where they say, be careful what you wish for, it may happen?
Yeah.
Well, about a week later, I came to work and couldn't find my desk. It was buried under boxes, I mean, like up to the ceiling. And these were all the arrest reports. And I had to cull through them manually. We didn't have a computerized database back in the 80s. Do you know that in New York, I found that 60%, 60% of the people that we were arresting at the DEA task force covering the city of New York and the immediately surrounding area, 60% were identified as foreign-born. Nationally, it was 30%.
I believe that because we had these folks coming into my office. They were marrying American girls, and then they would dump them once they got established. And then the girls are coming in because they've got a domestic violence complaint against them. And I thought, what the hell is going on here? And that's what it was, you know, and they're still doing it.
And you know what's so astonishing, and I want you folks out there to understand something. You know, with all this emphasis on the border, John Huntsman, I mean, my gosh, I don't think he's really ready for primetime player, said that he would deal with immigration by talking to the governors of the four border states. You were in Kansas. I was in New York. Immigration slams every single state in this nation, and these folks aren't only coming across the Mexican border. The Mexican border is very important. Don't misunderstand what I'm saying, folks. You can't minimize how important that border is. But we have millions of people, whether the number is 5 million, which is the government's official estimate, or 10 million, which is what I'm hearing from folks at DEA, from the DHS right now. These are folks who came with visas or were admitted under the visa waiver program, which is another bit of lunacy that one day I'd love to talk to you about. But they're coming through ports of entry and then violating the terms of their admission. Millions of them, and many of them are involved with criminal activities. The terrorists who attacked us on 9/11 all came through ports of entry. So it's not just about the Mexican border. And I provided testimony for Grassley, and Grassley's doing a great job. And if we have time, I want to get with you about this whole thing with Fast and Furious and firearms being given to the drug cartels in Mexico. But they were doing a hearing on VAWA, the Violence Against Women's Act, where aliens are now allowed to file petitions for themselves to get green cards if they simply make an allegation that their spouse somehow beat them, abused them, did something nasty to them. What we're now witnessing, and I've been involved with a couple of these cases, are American citizens who had criminal charges lodged against them by alien spouses because the Americans said, you know, I know you don't really want to be with me, and I'm not going to put the paperwork in for you because I don't think you should get a green card because I don't want to stay married to you. So in the old days, these folks would be out of luck and they'd have to go home. Because of the Violence Against Women's Act, and it also can affect men, by the way, they can now file a complaint against that citizen spouse and immediately go to immigration and say, well, my spouse abused me, I filed a criminal complaint, I want my green card, and by God, we'll give it to them. How crazy is that?
It's another loophole they've got, and they know what to do, many of them, before they, and you know this, Mike,
sure,
before they ever leave Mexico. Mexico's got a book that I've had for years, that it's kind of a comic book looking thing, but they hand it out to show them how to get help, where to go to get help, in social services. I'm told that social services, which includes everything from child care, food stamps, you name it, they drop them off by the busloads at the SRS compound. We had a whistleblower, and I ended up with three of them, and they all confirmed what they said. They drop them off by the busloads, and they get their help. You know, and that's not just here.
And it's, by the way, folks, it's not just the Mexicans. I had a case in Florida where a gentleman was married. He was a U.S. veteran. He had been in the Vietnam War. He's a guy in his 50s, married a Russian gal. And then he found out that other women that she was friends with did the same thing to their spouses. She didn't want to spend time with them, didn't want to spend the evening with them, if you get my drift, didn't want to make dinner, was out, you know, running around with her friends. And when he threatened her and said, listen, either you treat me better or I'm out of this marriage, while he's sleeping one day, She apparently scrapes up her arm, and this guy had a carry permit in Florida. The gun was in a safe, but she scratched up her arm so that she drew blood, called the police, and this guy gets rousted out of bed at 5:30 in the morning by four cops, and he finds out he's being charged with felony assault. And she, of course, immediately went to immigration and filed the petition. I was contacted by the defense attorney. Now, when he told me the story, I said, well, you know, did she go to immigration? He said, yes, she did. And I agreed to help this guy. And as soon as they said that they had me on board and that we were going to look at the immigration fraud aspect, she immediately withdrew the complaint. They dropped the criminal charges. This guy was looking at 20 years in jail. And she said, you know what, I'm just going to go back to Russia. I don't even want to imagine what would have happened if I hadn't gotten involved in that case. How screwy is that?
Well, that's just another kind of a victim that there is, you know. But
and it's the American citizen who's the victim.
Yeah. Our website is just a drop in the bucket when you compare the number of Americans. Most of them are Americans killed by illegal aliens, but we do have other crimes on there that are serious crimes. And according to Congressman King's figures, as of today, I figured it out going back to 9/11, 88,275 American citizens have been killed
by
illegal aliens in America. Now, he says there's 25 a day killed. If there's 5 a day, that's too much. It amounts to about 9,000 a year killed by illegal aliens. And the media... We got two big enemies here, the pro-illegal politicians, this is the two main ones, and the media.
Yep.
The media won't report it. We've got a case here in Kansas City involving an 11-month-old girl that's been missing for about a month now, and that has been all over the local and national news, and God bless this little girl, it's tragic, but that's one case, and it's all over the news. But where are they at with these 88,000 Americans that are killed?
Over what period of time were the 88,000 killed?
That's since 9/11.
Wow.
That's Congressman King's figures going at 25 a day. Now, you know, I'm going to say 88,275 plus or minus, but it's right around that 90,000 mark. That's
and this includes, of course, the drunk drivers as well as the people that have committed armed robberies and so forth.
Half of them, 25 a day, half of them are drunk drivers. That's a macho thing in some of the foreign countries. And the rest are homicides and other crimes.
It's staggering.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And I'm passionate about this. I know folks personally that have lost loved ones. And, it's so unnecessary. It's absolutely unnecessary. And, you know, we're always going to have illegals, but not to... We shouldn't have it to the extent that we do. They've been saying 10,000. I got involved in this over eight years ago, and they've been saying 10,000. Now they're up to 12,000. By God, it's 40,000 to 50,000 illegals in this country.
You mean million, not thousand. You mean millions.
Now millions, yes. Thank you.
Yeah, that's okay.
Yeah, 10, 12 million is what they've been saying for years. Now that's your government figures, so, you know, I just don't put any stock in that. Some... people are saying 40 million.
I wouldn't doubt it's 40, and I'll tell you what's remarkable. You know, I was an agent back in 1986 when they passed the Immigration Reform and Control Act, and they told us, and we were a hard sell, as you might imagine. The agents were, oh, we're going to do this one-time amnesty. We promise you this will never happen again, but we'll set the clock back. We'll zero out the counter. We're going to start with a fresh day, and from this point forward, boy, we're going to gain control. And we all kind of looked at each other, and we knew this was a lot of nonsense, because what was going to prevent the next wave of coming when nothing changed?
Yeah.
You know what's astonishing, Ed? I don't know if you know this, but TSA has over 60,000 employees. 60,000 employees. And, you know, I just wrote an article, and by the way, folks, there's two websites I'm gonna kind of hit on here that I'd love for you to check out. One, of course, is my website, michaelcutler.net. The other one is I'm a senior fellow with a group called CAPS, Californians for Population Stabilization, and their terrific website is capsweb.org. And I just wrote an article for them, And what I had said is, if you get some guy who's 85 years old and he's wearing glasses thick enough to stop a 357, and he's going to get on an airplane, and because he didn't clean his glasses that day, he opens the wrong door and the alarm goes off, that terminal goes into lockdown. They bring the airplanes back to the gate. They get the people off the planes. They get the baggage off the airplanes. They search everything all over again. Airline schedules get screwed up clear across the world. But that's because one guy opened one door and, you know, he made an honest mistake. At the same time, every single day, unknown thousands, perhaps tens of thousands of illegal aliens whose true identities, nationalities, backgrounds, affiliations, and intentions are unknown and unknowable, charge across our nation's borders, and the government does nothing in reaction to it. Is that insanity or is that insanity?
Mike, there's 100, plus or minus, there's 193 or 198 countries on the planet.
That's right.
And a figure that I've got is there's 143 of them have illegals here. Now, we all know that most of them are Hispanic or South American. That's not our fault, but they're still here. And that's why they, you know, and this is why we designed Foreign National Crime Information Center to report where they're from. But I got to tell you, most of them are from Mexico, Guatemala, and some of the South American countries. And it's not our fault, but we're reporting it as it is.
But the one thing that I do want to make clear is that the immigration laws don't make any distinction as to race, religion, ethnicity, or nationality of an illegal alien. In fact, when I was the Marine Intelligence Officer for about 3 or 4 years, I would join the Coast Guard and U.S. Customs, because back then we were separate agencies, and I would board the vessels and look for contraband and stowaways. So during that 3 or 4 year period, 90% of the people that I was looking for and arresting were illegal aliens from Greece. So again, I want to be clear, folks. We do get a lot of illegals, the preponderance, come from Latin America because of geography. But the laws themselves are not designed and not intended to make distinctions based on race, religion, ethnicity, or nationality. You're simply either an American citizen or you're not. And if you're not an American citizen, the legal proper term to describe such a person is an alien, a term that the open borders crowd, I call them the immigration anarchists, hate because it provides clarity to the debate. And if there's one thing that the immigration anarchists can't abide by, it's clarity or honesty where the immigration discussion or debate is concerned. Would you disagree with what I'm saying, Ed?
No, not at all. It's you know, it's an open book. You know, they found Qurans, prayer rugs, shoulder patches from Mideastern countries,
yep,
on the border.
Special interest countries.
Huh?
What we call special interest countries, countries that, yep, we associate with terrorism.
They're OTMs, you know, other than Mexicans.
Other than Mexican, yeah. But these are specifically the special interests, the terror sponsors of the countries that are involved with the sponsorship of terrorism, and they're here.
Yeah.
And they're here. And this is what blows my mind. We're still giving political asylum to people without investigating them. There's a guy by the name of Cansey who in 1993 got political asylum by lying, and he repaid us for our compassion by standing outside the CIA headquarters in Langley, Virginia, with an AK-47 and opened fire on the vehicles being driven into the parking lot by CIA officers. He killed 2, wounded 3. He got political asylum by lying. And we still see it happening routinely. If you look at the ICE website, you will see where they will talk about all these people that they arrest. There was one guy by the name of Fez Hazian who was arrested for alien smuggling, but he had gotten political asylum. And guess how long it took them to adjudicate his application? This is according to the ICE press release. I'm taking them at their word. In under 6 weeks from the day that he filed the application, he was from Eritrea, they went ahead and gave him political asylum, and afterwards, according to the press release, they found out that he really wasn't in Eritrea running for his life, but he was in Guatemala smuggling aliens into the United States through Central America. But there wasn't a word in that press release about anybody going back and saying, you know what, not only are you a smuggler, because he pleaded guilty to smuggling, but you also committed fraud on that application. So I wouldn't doubt for a moment that he still has a viable claim to political asylum, which likely means that when he gets out of jail for smuggling aliens, we won't deport him. How crazy is that?
the whole thing is. And Mike, we need to mention the Tea Party Immigration Coalition.
Oh, absolutely, and I'm proud to be a part of that, and I know you are as well. We've got a lot of good folks there at the Tea Party Immigration Coalition.
That's what got this press news release going, or news conference going on the 3rd, and the National Day of Remembrance for victims of illegal aliens is going to be November the 6th every year, we hope.
And I got to tell you how important this is. And by the way, again, for a point of clarity, I am not a member of the Tea Party. I've been registered as a Democrat. I can't tell you the last time I voted for a Democrat. Those folks need a GPS, but I think most of our politicians, with a couple of noteworthy exceptions, I think most of these characters need a GPS or something. But this is an American issue. And I'm proud to be one of the folks involved with the Tea Party Immigration Coalition, because Americans of all political orientations need to set aside their differences about ideology and politics and understand that the immigration crisis, the fact that we allow criminals and terrorists into our country, the fact that American workers are being displaced by foreign workers, the fact that we have a growing presence of drug cartels, including the extremely violent Mexican cartels, in ever more cities every day, isn't a conservative or a liberal issue, a Tea Party issue, a Republican or a Democrat issue. This is an American issue. And really, this business of divide and conquer, how you see the politicians trying to pit one group of Americans against another. Folks, we've got to come together as Americans. It's not about bashing immigrants. I have no problem with people lawfully immigrating to America. My own mother was an immigrant. She came here legally just ahead of the Holocaust. But it's about making certain that we don't permit people into our country who would do harm to us, and that when somebody does get identified as posing a threat, that our government reacts swiftly and appropriately to remove that person from our midst to protect us. Because isn't that the primary responsibility of government? To provide for the safety and security of its citizens. I mean, that's what you and I dedicated our life's work to, wasn't it?
Yeah, we had an oath that we took, but it seems like that's not that important anymore to politicians.
Well, to the politicians, to the officers, it's certainly important, but not to the politicians. That oath is important to our valiant soldiers, but again, not to our politicians. Isn't that remarkable?
If the media would report on what we're talking about, this would have been over years ago, but they're in the tank along with the politicians and the NWO and all of that, New World Order, and that's where this is at. They want one world government, and some people, you know, a lot of things that I say, including what I just said, people used to think you're crazy. Well, over the 8 years, a lot of what I was telling them 8 years ago has come to pass, almost everything. And I think people are waking up to the NWO and the North American Union and all of this, and that's where we're going with all of this.
Well,
I can't believe that, during the Clinton administration, the soccer moms were raising hell and got their attention. If the soccer moms and all of the moms and grandmothers, grandparents, if they knew where this was headed and how it's going to affect their kids, they'd be marching on Washington. But the thing is to get them educated, and the only way we can do that is what we're doing over the Internet, because the media won't report it.
Well, you know, I was on Neil Cavuto a while back, and I can't think of this knucklehead's name, and the guy just got convicted. He was an illegal alien from Latin America who's drunk. He had been previously arrested, by the way, for drunk driving, never deported, should have been. Smashed into a car driven by nuns and injured two and, I believe, killed one nun. And it was amazing because I know Neil Cavuto was furious. He said, Mike, why is this guy still here? I said, well, why don't you get Janet Napolitano to come on and explain it? Why don't you get the President of the United States to explain it? And I'll tell you something. And, you know, as a New Yorker, unfortunately, I had a front row seat to 9/11. I think my whole town still suffers post-traumatic stress. I got to be honest with you. I don't think any of us who were in New York on that day will ever be the same. But it was preventable, because in 1993, our nation was attacked not once but twice by men from the Middle East who gamed the visa system, gamed the immigration bureaucracy to get into the United States and then prepare for the attacks that they subsequently carried out. In 1993, we had the first attack, and I had mentioned it, this guy Cansey, who shot up the CIA. A month later, we had the first attack on the World Trade Center. And the characters who did that attack had come here illegally or with visas and then managed to get immigration benefits. One guy, Abu Alima, got himself agricultural amnesty, something that Chuck Schumer, my former congressman, now the senator from my state, pushed hard for. And I met with Chuck back in 1985 before the amnesty was passed. And I said, what are you doing? You don't even have any farms in your district. Well, he was so angry with me that he escorted me out of his office, didn't want to talk about it, told me I didn't see the big picture. And I predicted to him in 1985 that what he was pushing for would create fraud and endanger our safety. Well, lo and behold, 93, we had the attack at the Trade Center. Six people were killed, hundreds, perhaps thousands injured. They almost brought the tower down sideways. Now think about it. The World Trade Center stood 1,400 feet tall. It was 110 stories tall. It was a vertical city. One of those towers darn near collided with the other tower. Had that happened, it would have been like falling dominoes. Half of Lower Manhattan would have been leveled. I assure you it still would not be inhabitable today. They would have taken out the tunnels connecting Manhattan from Brooklyn and New Jersey. You would have had hundreds of thousands of dead bodies. This was on Clinton's watch. So he didn't have one. He had those two attacks. We had the attack on the USS Cole. And what did the Clinton administration do? Nothing. In fact, they implemented a program called Citizenship USA, where they rammed over a million citizenship applications through the process. And after the fact, the GAO, in responding to complaints by the folks who worked for immigration, said, you know something? Thousands of these people not only should not have been naturalized, they probably should have been deported. And one of my good friends went to testify before Congress. I arranged for him to do that. And he had been the head of investigations of a major city for immigration. And when he went back to his home office after testifying before Congress, where he called Citizenship USA the Jiffy Lube process, they removed him from his job on a pretext. This all happened under the Clinton administration. And I will make a very clear statement about this. If the Clinton administration had responded appropriately, had learned the lessons that the 93 attacks on the World Trade Center should have taught them, 9/11 would not have been possible, because immediately they would have understood the need to tighten up on the visa process, tighten up on the way we adjudicate applications. And in fact, Lamar Smith, currently the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, invited me to testify before a hearing that he conducted into visa fraud and benefit fraud on May 20th of 1997. Now, that was almost four and a half years before the attacks of 9/11. So clearly people understood that the people who did the murders gamed the visa process, gamed the immigration system, and the Clinton administration did nothing in response. And let's be fair about this. What did George W. Bush do after 9/11 to protect the American borders? Nothing. He sent Border Patrol agents to secure the Iraqi border and left our border unprotected. Where is the reasoning behind this? You tell me. Am I getting any of this wrong, Ed?
No, you're not. But let me add to what you said about the USS Cole, et cetera. And this is all done by Muslim male extremists between the ages of 18 and 34, I think it is. Killing of Bobby Kennedy, Munich Olympic athletes,
yep.
79 bombing of the U.S. Embassy in Iran, 1980s Americans kidnapped in Lebanon, Marine barracks in Lebanon in 1983, Achilles Laurel hijacking, 1985, a handicapped American was pushed overboard, 1985...
Klinghoffer.
Huh?
No, the guy's name was Klinghoffer, that's right.
Yeah, yeah. 1985, TWA Flight 847 hijacked, Navy SEAL was killed. 88, Pan Am 103 bomb, 93 World Trade Center, which you mentioned. 88, U.S. embassies bombed in Tanzania and Kenya. Mm-hmm. 2000, as you mentioned, USS Cole. 2001, World Trade Center, Pentagon Flight 93. And the list goes on and on. And it's this is not Mexicans. This is not Hispanics. This is not Guatemalans. This is Muslims, and they're here, and they're letting them still come here. This list, the first time I heard it came from Roger Hedgecock, who has a talk show, and he went through this thing much more eloquently than I could ever do it. But that really grabbed me, and I just had to copy that list. And when somebody accuses me, here's what they say, well, where are your people? Where'd they come from? My answer to that is my ancestors were Cherokee Indians, and that usually shuts them up. And when they say, well, now, you're just picking on Mexicans, I read them this list.
Yep.
You know, it's just...
And that's why I want to make that point. You see, the immigration laws, folks, are designed to do what any common-sense homeowner or apartment dweller does. You look through your peephole when someone knocks on your door. That's why houses come equipped with peepholes and door knockers or a doorbell, so that a stranger who wants to enter into your house has to ring the bell or knock on the door, and you get to look them over before you decide on whether or not to let that stranger into your house. I did that job for the first 4 years of my career at Kennedy Airport. I was an immigration inspector. That was my job, to use the law. And let's be clear, for those of you that want to jot this down, and if you've read my website, you already know what I'm about to say, but if you look at Title 8, United States Code, Section 212, that is a list of the grounds for excluding an alien from the United States of America. And it starts off with aliens with dangerous communicable diseases, aliens who suffer mental illness and are prone to violence or sexual deviation, like the pedophiles. Now, that's interesting all by itself, because stop and think about this. We hear all this, you know, wailing about, oh, my God, they closed Ellis Island. Yeah, they did, but they have all these international airports that opened in its place. But Ellis Island was a quarantine station. It wasn't an easy deal. You came to Ellis Island, and you still were not guaranteed entry into the United States. That's why they put it on an island, so that the government decided whether you would get to the mainland or not. You cannot swim from Ellis Island to Manhattan. It doesn't work. The water is too deep, and the currents are too strong. So they purposely put Ellis Island the way they did to quarantine people until the determination could be made that they were safe to allow them onto the mainland. And then that law, Section 212, goes on and lists alien smugglers, human traffickers, narcotics traffickers, gang members, money launderers, prostitutes, human rights violators, war criminals, spies, terrorists. It's a very inclusive list. And eventually it gets down to people who would work illegally and take the jobs that Americans would be taking. So those laws are designed to protect America and Americans. And when you hear some politician, like now it's Rick Perry saying, well, if you're here illegally, I want to give you a work permit. Nonsense. Those laws are in place for one purpose and one purpose alone, to protect America and Americans. It's one of the most fundamental set of laws that a federal government can have to control the entry of foreign nationals onto your soil. And if you can't execute those laws effectively, you don't have a country. And again, would you disagree with anything I'm saying, Ed?
No, I wouldn't. And that's the shame of it. It's just, you know, if somebody had made a movie about what was going on here, what is going on here, they'd have made a movie of this 20 years ago. It would have been along with all the other disaster movies we had, you know, and nobody would have believed it.
Yep.
It's just amazing.
Well, you know, I used to tell my neighbors that we were in deep trouble back in the 80s because I could see it happening.
Well,
and, you know,
too.
People looked at me like I was crazy. They said, oh, what are you talking about?
Oh, I know.
I'm sorry?
I know. I know what you're saying. We've all been there.
Oh, my gosh. They would say to me, what, are you kidding? I said, you know, we're going to wind up with terrorist attacks in America. Oh, this is America. They wouldn't dare attack us. I had idiot bosses and you know, from my agency, unfortunately, not always the best and brightest got to the top. Some did, but very often our bosses were the guys who agreed to go along to get along, in sharp contrast with some of the good bosses who knew what the devil they were talking about. But I'm sure you've had your share of both sorts of bosses along the way. But they would say, oh, no, they'd never attack America. They'll just do that over there. And I said, you guys are living in a fantasy world. The day will come when we will get attacked.
We have been.
And here we are. But I'm saying, I was saying this back in the 80s. My friends at the FBI were saying the same thing.
Yeah.
And nobody wanted to listen. We were the boys who cried wolf back then. We were Chicken Little running around saying the sky's about to fall. And unfortunately, on 9/11, it did.
But it doesn't go back that far, Mike. I mean, I was telling people we're under an invasion 8 years ago, and I had people say, take me off your list. You know, I was a radical,
wow,
crazy person.
That's
look
amazing.
What's happened.
No, that's truly amazing. I mean, what does it take to convince somebody that there's something terribly wrong here? And you know, you
well,
still have people. I don't know. Did you see the piece that I wrote about Alan Greenspan? Alan Greenspan, folks, I have to tell you, I was on a radio show, and I always try to use a little bit of twisted humor. That's just my personality, and it helps me keep my sanity. I was asked what I thought about watching Greenspan testify before Congress. You could actually still see the video. And I said I was struck by the idea that as I watched him, I thought, boy, this is the first time somebody's testifying while suffering from rigor mortis. But this guy was amazing. He talked about how we've made a privileged elite. Those were his words. Privileged elite out of Americans who have skills or education, that they're overpaid, that there should be no difference in wages between Americans with no skills and people with skills. And we could solve this problem, I'd love to know what the problem is, by making Americans compete with foreign workers for their jobs. This was the guy who in 2005 was boasting about how he was responsible for providing subprime mortgages to illegal aliens, which is what started this economic crisis in the first place. So when you look at the sellout, when you look at the people making all this money, and when you look at the people in Washington and in your state capitals, I mean, here in New York, Governor Cuomo said, oh, I don't want any part of secure communities because we might actually deport people who aren't really convicted felons. And now over Rikers Island, the city jail, the city is trying to get immigration out of the jail because they're saying, well, if you committed a felony, but it's not really a bad felony or serious, I mean, a felony by definition is bad and serious. But they want to sit there and say, well, you know what, even if it's a felony, unless we think it was serious, we don't want immigration to remove you from the United States. At what point do the American people, do the citizens of cities and states that have sanctuary policies rise up and say, you know what, you need to be removed. You're not looking out for our well-being. Look at what happens when kids join gangs, and I'm sure you've encountered this as a police officer. Is this not the destruction of the lives of the children who get caught up in the gang madness?
Well, when I was working gangs and so forth, it was a lot different than it is now. We've got the Mexican cartels here, and if you look at the map of the United States of where gangs are at, there's red dots all over the United States.
Yep.
I've told people, and I've been criticized for this, the lion is no longer in the desert.
No.
It's all over America, and you look at this map and you'll see that.
And you know, the FBI just did a report, and I wrote a commentary. Again, please go to my website, michaelcutler.net, and please go to the website that Ed Hayes administers. Why don't you put that out again, Ed? What is that website again?
The easiest way to get there is just VOIAC, victimsofillegalaliencrimes.org, VOIAC.org.
V-O-I-A-C.
V-Victor-O-I-A-C, yes, .org. You know, our website is Foreign National Crime Information Center-Victims of Illegal Alien Crimes Memorial. We hope to someday be able to put up a memorial if it's no more than billboards. But that's our goal, is have a memorial for the victims. If anybody wants any information from me, they can email me. They can get my email address, my phone number, and everything off of the website, voyac.org. But my email is AmericanPatriots, spelled with an S, AmericanPatriots@sbcglobal.net. AmericanPatriots@sbcglobal.net. And anyone can report a victim on our website. There's a report button when you get to the website. It takes you to a sheet to fill out, and all you need to do is put the date of the crime, the victim's name. Now, you need a link in order for it to work. We don't, just because somebody reports something, we don't just put it on. We research it. And that's why we need links. If we have newspaper articles and so forth, we can go with them, but I have called law enforcement. I've called news media people to verify, In other words, we don't just stick anything on there. It's honest reporting.
Well, you know, but the thing that needs to be understood is that anybody who was killed by an illegal alien died needlessly.
Well,
because
yeah.
if immigration had done its job, if the border was as secure as Napolitano, the head of DHS, and, you know, I've come to call DHS the Department of Homeland Surrender, and that's just a symptom of my frustration. If that border was truly secure and these folks couldn't get here, because that's how you know when a border is secure. You know, you can tell if a boat is watertight. If you put it out in the lake and it doesn't sink, it's watertight. Don't tell me it's watertight as you watch it head for the bottom of the lake, because that's not watertight.
That's what she said.
Am I right or wrong?
You're right. I got to tell you, a few months ago when she reported the border was safer than ever. You know, whenever she says that, I'm looking at a clown. Well, whenever I look at her, I'm looking at a clown. But anyway, I got contacted by a newspaper and said, what do you think of this? I said, well, I've been to the border 3 times, and I have a lot of associates and contacts and friends on the border states, and Janet Napolitano's full of crap. They printed it.
Tell us what you really think, Ed.
They printed it.
Tell us what you really think.
I'll send that to you.
Absolutely.
I mean, I couldn't believe they printed. I mean, you know, I figured they'd ad lib, but it was a pretty good article.
I was interviewed by Jerry Siepert. I've been interviewed by him many times, and he asked me what I thought of he's over at the Washington Times, and Jerry said, well, what do you think of what the union is saying and the fact that they've hung up signs all along the border warning people to stay out of the area because, you know, the bad guys are there, the smugglers are there. I said, well, maybe it's time to change the American flag from red, white, and blue to simply white, the flag of surrender.
Yeah. Well, at least 80 miles.
And by the way, he quoted me in the article.
Yeah.
Because I'm
so
frustrated.
Well, that's the way it is, 80 miles from the border. They don't want you into that national park zone.
Isn't this astonishing? And you know, interesting story. One of the things that I do is I work with a group that does seminars for the U.S. government. And sometimes the audience can be members of intelligence agencies or federal law enforcement or the military. And a couple of weeks ago, I was in Washington, D.C. I had the privilege to address a bunch of Air Force officers, and among them were colonels, generals, and so forth. And I said, you know, I'm a huge fan of the military. I don't want anyone to get the wrong idea. And, in fact, I'm especially, you know, fond of the Air Force. My dad's brother was in the Army Air Corps during the Second World War, and he was assigned to the Pacific Theater. But I said, I don't understand why we still have a military. And, boy, these guys were furious. I mean, you could just see the look on their face. I said, hey, guys, just calm down because I'll get to my explanation in just a second. I said, here's the deal. In The Godfather, they said, keep your friends close and your enemies closer. But isn't it true that the primary mission, because I know our military serves so many purposes to project power and diplomacy and all this other business, but job one for the military, you would think, is to keep our enemies as far from our country's shores as possible. I said, so here's my question. How can you fulfill your primary mission when the administration that puts you and your colleagues in harm's way is the same administration that refuses to secure the borders, that has encouraged the entrance of millions of illegal aliens, that there's no way of knowing who they are or what they're up to, and meanwhile, you and your buddies are out there going in harm's way to secure America. How can you secure America when we have so many folks within our borders who don't obviously wish us well? Boy, you should have seen the reaction I got after I said that. But again, does that not make sense to you, what I'm saying, Ed?
Yeah, and it made sense to them. But, you know, if we could just get the military educated on this and the soccer moms, I mean, that is huge.
Well, I suggested to them, and this is what I said to these generals and colonels. I said, folks, nobody can question the fact that you aren't good Americans, you are great Americans. No one can challenge your patriotism. But I'm going to challenge who you are when you are off duty. And I'm going to do it very easily. I want you guys to raise your hands and tell me how many of you have ever made a phone call, written a letter, or reached out in one way or another to an elected representative to voice your concerns about what is wrong. and barely a hand went up. I said, you're all fired. I said, here's the deal. You have a level of credibility that very few people enjoy by virtue of your professions. You are our professional warriors, our leaders in the military. You have every right to write a letter to your member of Congress and say to that member of Congress, I am a colonel or a general or you know, a captain, whatever the rank. And I have come to the conclusion that we cannot defend our country until and unless we secure the borders and create an immigration system that really has integrity, that we stop naturalizing people without giving the immigration files to the adjudications officers, that we stop rewarding people for committing fraud and who get political asylum by lying on their application and nothing is done except they get the benefit that they apply for. Because these are all embedding tactics of the terrorists who want to kill us, of the drug gangs who want to open up shop in cities clear across this country, and they have. And it's not even just the Mexican cartels. It's MS-13. It's Asian organized crime. It's the Russian mob. It's the Jamaican drug posses. You name the criminal organization from some part of the world, and I assure you that there are cities in America that are now playing host to these thugs. And I said, if you wrote those letters, if you made those contacts with your credibility as military officers, you'd be a hard voice to ignore. And do you know how many of these guys came up to me afterwards and said, Mr. Cutler, I never even thought about it, but when I go home tonight, guess what I'm doing? I'm going to write a letter.
My guess is all of them.
Well, I hope they all do. Folks, we have an obligation. The First Amendment isn't only about freedom of speech, freedom of religion, and freedom of the press. Everybody always rattles that off. There's two other components, the right to peaceably assemble, and the right to seek redress of grievances. And boy, do we have some serious grievances. And the way that we these days assemble peaceably is on programs like this one, on the internet, talk radio. We have so many different ways these days of meeting and assembling peaceably. In the days of the founding of this country, you either got together with someone face-to-face or you didn't, which is why they talked about meeting peaceably or peaceably assembling. Today, there is no excuse for not becoming educated and getting your friends to understand the issue also. By the way, you know, while Ed and I have been chatting, if anybody wants to call in and join the conversation, let me put the phone number out there. It's 310-982-4145. You can call in and join us at 310-982-4145. You know, you're really a wealth of information about this stuff. And when you go over those victims, how many of them are kids? How many of them, when you look at it, you know, those heart-wrenching stories that the media loves to pick up on until you tell them that the crime was committed by somebody who had no lawful right to be in our country?
You know, that's interesting. I don't know how many are kids, but if you go to the website, we got pages and pages and pages, and there's kids on every page.
Well,
we had a little girl murdered in South Texas a couple of days ago, and there were a couple of blurbs about it on Fox. I don't watch the alphabet channels, but I'll about guarantee there was nothing on them, and that's over with. And I can't find anything on her, but at the same time, they're reporting on this 11-year-old girl nationally that they don't know what happened to her. She may be alive, but this little girl is raped and murdered in South Texas by her cousin.
Yeah, 10-year-old girl.
10 years old, and they don't touch it.
And you know what's so remarkable? The guy that killed her, her cousin, an illegal alien from Latin America, and she is Hispanic. This notion that's out there that somehow you're anti-immigrant if you want the borders secured and you want to remove people from our country who shouldn't be here, nothing could be further from the truth, because the most likely victims of ethnic organized crime, and I'm sure you saw this as a police officer, the most likely victims are the members of the immigrant community. And there's two reasons here. Number one, of course, they live in that community, and that's where they're doing business. But they're, pardon me, they're also able to make threats and deliver on the threats to do harm to family members back in the home country if they don't do the bidding of the bad guys. Now, stop and think about this. They go up to some guy, and again, it's not just Latin America. It could be the Russian mob. It could be Asian organized crime. And they tell somebody, listen, you just saw somebody get killed. You go to the police. We know where your sister is living. Or here's a suitcase. We want you to bring it to our buddy down in Miami. You don't bring the suitcase? That's not a problem. I know where your brother and his family lives back in Moscow. He's going to disappear tomorrow.
And look at Sharia law. Fathers killing their daughters because they have shamed the family. That's the problem with a lot of the illegals or foreign nationals. They come here and they don't want to assimilate. The age of consent south of the border is 10 to 12 years old. You have all of these customs that they bring with them, and they don't want to assimilate. They want to keep their own customs, their own flags, and that's why we have this problem with Sharia law, which if we don't watch that very carefully, you know, and the current administration is cowing down to the Muslims. They deny it. They can deny it all day long, but they're not going to convince me.
And, you know, it's remarkable. I know there was supposed to be a conference held, I think it's in Tennessee. I don't want to misspeak. But I was told that it was about Sharia law and why it's a problem for us. And I think we need to look honestly and objectively at any religious practice that causes people to be hurt or denigrated or subjugated or whatever, because it just doesn't work. This is America. We're supposed to have equality and freedom. And you can't, in the name of God, go against that fundamental underlying principle that's very strong in our Constitution. And so they were going to have a conference, and apparently a lot of pressure was being brought to bear on hotels that were agreeing to have some of the participants in the conference stay at the hotels, and believe it or not, the hotels canceled those people's reservations. You know, this goes to this whole idea about the First Amendment. I don't have to agree with what other people say, but they have the right to say it unless they're screaming fire in a crowded theater, unless they're advocating violence. Once you advocate violence, all bets are off. But if you have a political persuasion or philosophy, you have as much right as I have to speak your mind as I have to speak my mind, with that one caveat, as long as you're not calling for violence or that sort of thing. So suddenly we're in a situation where, oh, it's not politically correct, we're going to shut you up. And corporations who are chasing the almighty dollar can't wait to do the bidding of the guy that's got the deepest pockets. And that's what's happening in these political campaigns. Ed, you and I both know we couldn't take a cup of coffee as agents or as a police officer. Could you imagine if you went to your boss when you were a cop and said, man, you ought to be proud of me. I'm the best fundraiser in the office. How quickly would you have wound up in front of a grand jury? And properly so. But yeah. Meanwhile, how often do the politicians boast about being the best fundraisers there are?
Let me tell you about the supporters of the politicians. In 08, Chris Kobach wrote an immigration bill similar to Arizona, Senate mm-hmm. Bill 458, that was presented by Senator Peggy Palmer. And I have the list of the people that testified against that, and it's all the usual suspects. Chamber of Commerce
and so forth.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Churches. The Kansas Builders Association, the Meat Packers. I have that list if anybody wants it, and it's the same all over the United States. It's not just here in Kansas. It's the same.
That's right.
If you want the list, I've got it.
And you know, what's so amazing, and this is why I don't understand how anyone could say immigration is purely a conservative issue. I'm registered as a Democrat for a very simple reason, Ed. My parents died of cancer when I was in college. My dad was my biggest hero. He was a construction worker. He was a plumber. He died when I was 19, and he was 57. He died in part because he smoked three packs of Chesterfield a day, but he also died because during the Second World War, the military wouldn't have him because his brother was already in the Army Air Corps, and this was after the Sullivan brothers all died on that one ship, these five brothers, and my dad was to be the last to carry the family name. So he, as a plumber, as a pipe fitter, went to work in the Navy shipyards repairing vessels that came back all shot up or working on new battleships and aircraft carriers, because he had to do something to contribute to the war effort. I mean, you know, I come from a family where we believe strongly in America. We love this country. And so, you know, I remember how hard it was for those construction workers, and it still is. They put in a tough day's work. Construction is one of the few professions that's more dangerous than law enforcement. And all I want to see is balance. I don't want to see hardworking people denied a decent paycheck, and I don't want to see, you know, people that invest in a company not be able to be successful when the opportunities are there. You know, but there's got to be balance between the company owners and the folks who work for them. So I believe in trade unions, and that's why I'm a Democrat. But if you look at what's happening, this illegal immigration, we are hammering working people into the ground today.
Come here.
I mean, it's astonishing to me that the so-called liberals don't pick up on why it is that there is this insatiable appetite for illegal aliens. The immigration lawyers are looking for an endless supply of clients. The banks love to move the money for them because they get a piece of the action whenever there's a remittance. And, of course, these companies, the building companies and the slaughterhouses and the food processing plants, what they want is cheap, exploitable labor. How is that a conservative issue, Ed? I think this is an American issue.
It is, and, you know, they say they're doing the jobs Americans won't do.
Well, baloney.
Baloney, because when the Swift companies were closed down, they had Americans lined up around the block, and there was one similar. I mean, it happens all the time.
It does.
Here's another deal. Nowell, Missouri, the Christmas city, a little town in southwest Missouri, on the river, there's a Tyson plant there. They had 100 and some Muslims walk off the job because Tyson's wouldn't allow them their prayer time any longer because they were abusing it.
Right.
And so all of these Somalians walked off the job, and they had Americans lined up to take those jobs the next day.
Well, it's remarkable. And, you know, Jeffrey Immelt, the president of General Electric, was just on 60 Minutes, and he made an interesting point. He said that when he posts 1,000 jobs for $15 to $17 per hour, he winds up with 50,000 applications. So, you know, you don't join the middle class on $15 an hour. That's the working poor. Let's be very honest about this, especially in places like New York and so forth. So you tell me where there's a shortage of workers to do the jobs that they're complaining they don't have, and then you have Mayor Bloomberg who says, oh, we should have unlimited numbers of H-1B visas, the high-tech visas. Really? You're educating kids in college. They're paying a ton of money to get those degrees. They're delaying their entry into the workforce for the years that they're sitting in a classroom rather than sitting on a job. And then you want them to compete with people from India and other countries who will undercut them? You know, the Labor Department used to run immigration because the biggest concern was that if you bring in lots of foreign workers, you're going to do irreparable damage to the American worker. Of course, today, the politicians could care less because all they're looking at is who's giving them the campaign finances. And, of course, the guys with the deepest pockets aren't the hourly workers. The people with the deepest pockets are the guys who own and run these corporations, the people that make $100 million a year. When they screw up, they go out the door with a golden parachute. Now, I know you did some flying. I soloed. I never finished my license. I had about 20 hours of solo. I know that you were a pilot. You are a pilot, and you've done some parachuting. Now, tell me, with your experience, can you figure out the aerodynamics of a golden parachute, Ed? How's
I
that
wish
for a good
all
question?
Of them had a malfunction.
How's that for a good question?
Yeah. Let them all have a malfunction.
Isn't this astonishing?
Victims is heartbreaking.
Yep.
Anybody goes to our website and reads it and scrolls down page after page after page, it's heartbreaking. And my only wish is that the people who lose loved ones are the Americans that are pro-illegal. Now, that's somebody might think that's radical, but by God, they deserve it. These people that are losing loved ones, that, you know, they're not walking, talking, loving, enjoying life anymore, their life is gone. The people that's causing this are the ones that ought to suffer. And
well,
it's not just the politicians in office now, it's the ones that are past and present and future that are pro-illegal.
Well, here's the deal, folks. I want you all to please go to the website that Ed administers, the VOYAC website. And when you look at it, I want you to remember what it is you're looking at. You know, Joseph Stalin was really a pernicious monster, but he had a very interesting quote. He said that a million deaths is a statistic, but one death is a tragedy. When you go through those pages and you look at those victims, understand these are individual, discrete murders. Understand the impact that the deaths of these innocent victims had on the people within the community, the family members, their friends, the folks they worked with. I mean, this just ripples through the economy, community. It's just mind-numbing to think about this. These are deaths that were preventable if immigration did the job it's supposed to do. It's not about keeping out the world. It's just about keeping people out whose presence is harmful. The guy that looks through the peephole before letting a stranger into his home is not antisocial. He's just demonstrating good common sense. So here's my request to all of you who are listening to the program tonight. Again, I thank you for joining us. I'm sorry we were late today, but unfortunately things do happen occasionally that we don't want to have happen. But if in reading this you are as angered as we are, and I hear the anger in your voice, Ed, you know how I feel about this business, which is why I've been doing what I've been doing for almost 10 years now since 9/11.
Mad, and I wake up mad every day.
Well, and there are days I don't even sleep over this stuff because I know that the potential is there for another attack. The potential is there for more harm. And these are preventable. You know, when there's truly an accident and you say, well, it couldn't have been helped, you say, okay, so be it. Accidents happen. This isn't an accident. This is the willful neglect of our government, the willful ignoring of oaths of office, the fact that these folks don't stand for us any longer, but they're there for the people with the deepest pockets. You know, we get the best government money can buy every time there's an election. So if when you see this you get angry, I want you to do two things. I want you to call your congressman. I want you to call your senators. I want you to speak to your local politicians if you live in one of these Looney Tune areas, as I do, where there is a sanctuary policy. You know, I testified at a murder trial. There was a guy I physically put on an airplane. He was a drug dealer. He had a green card. He had his opportunity, and he blew it. His name was Ronaldo Rayside. He came back 2 years later. This is back in the 80s. The New York City Police Department arrested him not once but twice and never told immigration, even though his reentry was a felony. The third time, a police officer by the name of Robert Machado, who was 24 years old, got a hold of this guy, and a fight ensued. The guy grabbed for the police officer's gun. Bullets flew. Officer Machado was killed. At the time, his wife was pregnant with a daughter who I would ironically meet a couple of years ago. He never had the privilege or the pleasure of seeing his own daughter. He died that day. I testified for a full day on the witness stand. And a couple of years ago, I was in a supermarket just before it started to snow, and there was a little sleet falling, and I wanted to rush out of there with my groceries. So I went to a line that just opened, and here's this very young, attractive young lady working the cash register. She just opened up her line, and she's wearing a miniature New York City police badge. And when I asked her about it, it turned out that she was Robert Machado's daughter. I've been in touch with his brother, who just retired from the NYPD, and this was a senseless death. The NYPD wouldn't notify immigration that they had a guy in custody, and this was a guy who had been deported because of narcotics trafficking. This isn't a guy who was stopped for jaywalking. This wasn't a guy who didn't pay a parking ticket. This was a guy who committed a crime that was so serious that we stripped him of his residency because he had a conviction for trafficking in narcotics and other crimes. But the NYPD, with its leadership, so-called, under Rudy Giuliani, I might add, refused to notify immigration. So this is the way that we are all being placed at risk. And then we have Operation Fast and Furious, which is putting guns into the hands of the cartels. And the FBI just did a report about how gangs now number 1.4 million in this country. Certainly there's a lot of Americans who belong to these gangs because they include the Hells Angels and other motorcycle gangs. But a significant percentage of that 1.4 million are illegal aliens, aliens who are subject to deportation. And some of them are getting into the military. And the FBI said that there's a real problem because we have gang members in the jails. We have gang members in the military. And some of these gang members purposely don't get tattoos so that they're not identifiable as gang members. And I worked on investigations of this nature back in the 70s where these guys were getting into the Marine Corps, learning how to handle heavy weapons, and then pulling off commando-style bank robberies in New York City, killing a lot of people. So this is the threat that's being created. This is the danger being created by our own government. This isn't an accident. This is absolutely not an accident.
No, it's planned. It's been planned for years. And if you want to see anything about this, Google Norman Dodd and listen to his interviews. I sent you a CD on that, Mike.
Yep.
It tells about the plan. But I'd like to add something to what you said about calling
sure,
your
go right ahead, Ed.
And so forth. You need to get off the couch. You need to join an organization. Attend the rallies, the right rallies, not these guys that are crapping in the park and tearing everything up, doing what they say we do and we don't. But join a group and support the Tea Parties.
Look, it's very, very important. You know, I always end commentaries by saying that democracy is not a spectator sport. We have an obligation for ourselves, for our children, for their children. We have an obligation to honor the gallantry of our men and women in uniform. I mean, what in blazes are they fighting for if we can't give this country away fast enough? We are watching the decline of America. And what is so critically important about this, has America made mistakes over the years? You bet. But I'll tell you what, I will put America up against any other country in the history of the human race, and I don't know of any country that has done a better job of providing more opportunities than the United States, of being more fair to the greatest number of people than the United States, of righting the wrongs that it realizes it commits than the United States. We have an incredible track record. We have created so many opportunities for so many people, and we have been the force for good and democracy throughout the world. So you take America out of the equation. You let China or some other country take the lead, and believe me, it's going to be a very different world. America can't solve world poverty by bringing the whole world here. That doesn't work any more than you can't put everybody into a lifeboat, because the lifeboat will capsize and sink. But America can certainly wield a hell of a lot of influence if it's a strong, vibrant country, which it needs to be. But in order to attain that strength, in order to remain vibrant, in order to be successful, we really need to get control over our borders. We really need to make certain that Americans of all ethnicities, all races, all religions are granted the opportunities. This idea that we've got to provide in-state tuition for illegal aliens and ignoring the plight of American kids who live in Harlem and other tough neighborhoods, who are no less brilliant than kids who live in more affluent areas, but because of family circumstances live in poverty and certainly want to get out of poverty. And, you know, the unfortunate thing is that if you have a kid living in poverty and he has no opportunities to go to college and lift himself up that way, what do? They wind up getting involved in crime, which hurts everybody, themselves included. As a country, we need to stand together as Americans. We need to make our voices heard. We need to join the groups. We need to write the letters. We need to make the phone calls. We've got to stop being passive. We need to show as much enthusiasm for America as we do over who's going to win Dancing with the Stars or who's going to win the baseball game or who's going to win the Super Bowl. This is the Super Bowl, folks. If America doesn't make it, we're in pretty deep, let me tell you. And that's why I do this program, and that's why I'm so thrilled you do what you do, Ed. It's a privilege to work with you with the Tea Party Immigration Coalition and have you on the program tonight, because what you're doing is incredibly important for all of us.
We've got a very unique group of organizations and people in that coalition.
So I urge you folks out there, be mindful that November 6th, again, is a day of remembrance for the victims of criminal aliens. And I want to make it clear, we're talking about illegal aliens. It's not about immigrants. The difference between an immigrant and an illegal alien, as I like to say, is comparable to the difference between a house guest and a burglar. So that's the deal. I want our borders secure. Not Napolitano newspeak 1984 Orwellian nonsense, but I mean really secure. I want an immigration system that does provide people with the opportunity to get residency and citizenship, but where there's real integrity, where we don't reward the fraud, where we know who we're giving citizenship to. That's what I want. That's what most thoughtful Americans should want for this country. And by the way, Ed, I don't know if I had the chance to tell you, and I'll tell you and our listeners out there. I'll have more information next week, but Bill Tucker and I are trying to get a book together at this point. I hope it works out. I'll hopefully have more information by next Friday. But the whole point to all of these exercises, folks, is to provide information to you that, unfortunately, you're not going to get anywhere else. For whatever reason, and there's lots of reasons, most of it having to do with greed and the corporate mindset, most news broadcasts will not provide you with the information that we provided you this evening and that I tried to provide you each and every Friday night when I'm on this program here on the Michael Cutler Hour. So, Ed, I want to thank you so much for joining me tonight. I'm sorry that we got off to a late start. It was the night of the foul-up, which sometimes happens. As they used to say on the old TV shows, due to circumstances beyond my control, but we did get the show off the ground today. And it was really a pleasure having you come on and talk about the website and all of your hard work, which is certainly appreciated by so many of us. So I thank you.
Pleasure being with you, Mike, and we can do it again sometime.
Oh, I'd love to have you back real soon. You certainly have a unique perspective, and as a comrade in arms, as they say, both of us having been professional law enforcement officers, and that's what's so interesting. Different venue, on a different level, but the common ground is pretty evident quite quickly. So understand something, folks. This is a problem that spans the entire United States of America. Don't take the attitude, well, if I don't live in Texas or if I don't live in New York, I don't have a problem. Folks, this problem is national in scope, and only we the people can make the changes come about that we so desperately need. So I thank you for joining me, Ed. I thank all of you out there for joining us this evening, and I look forward to seeing you all next week at 7 o'clock, and it will be Eastern Standard Time because this week we fall back, we push the clock back, so we get an extra hour of sleep, which is a good thing. But I'll be here next Friday. And, Ed, I hope to have you back real soon. And, I again, thank you so much for joining me tonight.
Thank you, Mike. It's a pleasure. Talk to you later.
Okay, stay safe, buddy.
All right,
folks, I say good night to all of you. Hope you have a great weekend coming up. Hope you enjoyed this belated hour and almost 15 minutes. And, again, look forward to speaking with you all next week. Goodbye, everybody.